Jason stood just inside for a few seconds to let his eyes adjust to the dim interior of the room. At first, he thought there was no one there, but then he saw the figure sitting in a chair near the stove. Propped against the wall, the chair was sitting on its two back legs, the occupant sound asleep. Jason moved across the room and stood before the sleeping man. It had been about 3 years since he had seen Briny Bowen. In that 3 years, it appeared the cantankerous old man had aged about 10. Suddenly aware of a presence, Briny opened his eyes.
Hello, Briny.
Briny blinked the sleep from his eyes with no show of surprise. He gazed up at the imposing man before him.
Jason Storm. I might have known.
How you doing, Briny?
Hey, what the hell you doing this far out of your territory, Storm? I heard you turned in your badge a while back.
That's a fact. I'm just looking for a friend of mine. Thought he might have come your way maybe a day or two ago.
A friend of yours, huh? Well, you wasted your time. There ain't been nobody around here but few of my regulars. I ain't seen nobody new. And I damn sure ain't seen no friend of yours.
And you'd tell me if you had seen him. Wouldn't you, Briny?
Hell no, but there ain't been nobody.
He lowered his chair legs to the floor and walked over to spit in the fireplace.
Damn you, Jason Storm. You cost me a good customer the last time you showed up in my store.
He pointed to a dark stain near the center of the room.
A damn blood stain is still right there in the middle of the floor. Ned Skelly. He was like a brother to me, and you gunned him down.
He shouldn't have taken a shot at me. Look, I'm sorry Ned's passing grieved you so much. And what about Mace Cantrell? Is he like a brother to you, too? How long's he been gone? See, he's like a brother to me. And I need to catch up with him, and I know he was here.
Jason was not bluffing. Upon hearing Briny's words when he was woken abruptly from his nap, Jason was sure Cantrell had been there.
Jason Storm, I might have known him.
To Jason, that was the same as confirming that someone who was on the run had been there. And it had to be Mace Cantrell.
Where was he heading when he left here, Briny?
You go to hell. I told you he ain't been here.
Well, Briny, I'd like to stay and visit with you, but I gotta be on my way.
You're wasting your time!
You might be right, old man.
Jason untied the reins from the hitching post and took a moment to scan the clearing around the store. Hundreds of tracks went off in all directions, some old, some new, some in between. And he realized he didn't have a clue to start him in one direction or another. Jason stood there, stroking his chin thoughtfully over his dilemma, when he saw Horace coming from behind the barn carrying an empty bucket. Jason walked to meet him, leading Biscuit behind him. He recognized him as Briny's employee, and he recalled that Horace did not carry the burden of a complicated mind.
How you doing, Horace?
Pretty good.
Horace tried to remember where he had seen Jason before.
I was just slopping the hogs.
Yeah, Briny said you were out back at the barn.
He cocked his head to the side with a friendly grimace.
Seems a mite warm for this time of year, don't it?
I suppose.
Huh. Well, Briny said I just missed Mace Cantrell. I was hoping to catch up with him.
That's a fact. He missed him by a day or so. He joined up with some fellas that rode in from Butte the other day. You're gonna have to ride hard to catch up with him now.
Damn. Well, which way did they go?
Horace turned to point.
Back up the river yonder. I think them other boys had a camp up there somewhere.
Well, I'll see if I can catch up to them. How many were there?
5, counting Cantrell.
Jason climbed in the saddle.
I'm much obliged.
We gotta rest these horses.
They reined in at a small stream that wound like a snake around the treeless valley. They'd been pushing the animals pretty hard for most of the morning, and some of the horses were beginning to show the effects.
What's y'all fired hurry anyway? You said them cattle is scattered all over hell and back. Ain't likely to wander far.
I ain't worried about those damn cows. There's something else I want to settle. That Jasper that chased you out of town, I believe he kind of got under your skin a little bit. What do you think, Stump?
I believe he must have. Old Mace has got blood in his eye. Reminds me of that time in Sawyer's Town when that fella shot Mace's horse. You remember Booker, that fella at the grist mill? Took a shot at Mace with a shotgun. Missed Mace, but peppered his horse's ass good. Mace come off that horse, legs and arms are flying. That fella took off running and Mace right after him.
Mace didn't laugh. He remembered the incident well. Stump was right. He had been furious. He had to shoot the man in the leg in order to catch him, but he was not content to simply kill him. Mace closed his eyes while he recalled the brutal satisfaction he felt while beating that helpless man to death with the shotgun the man fired at him. He opened his eyes and looked around him then at the four men he had rejoined, and he felt invincible again. Then the image of Jason Storm came to his mind's eye, and the picture kindled a slow rage that would not be quelled until he saw the man dead. They dismounted and let the horses drink. Booker sat down near the bank of the stream. He studied Mace carefully.
This feller, this walking dead man you're itching to settle up with, who the hell is he? You say he ain't the sheriff of that little town?
I told you, I don't know who he is. They said he was just passing through. Came in the saloon to get a drink. And then I thought he went on his way. But the son of a bitch sneaked back in the general store and shot two of my men.
Sounds to me like something must have caught his eye. He found something to make it worth his while to help the town out. Maybe he's already rounding up them cows.
Maybe. But it's too big a job for one man alone. And there ain't nobody that I could see to help him. Me and my boys took care of that first thing.
We best take care of that stud horse before we do anything else. How much farther before we get to this town?
Before sundown tomorrow. Just remember, I got first call on him. He owes me.
Hell, you're welcome to him. If he's as tough as you say he is, I don't know the rest of us can handle him.
Booker winked at Stump, causing the stocky man to grin in return.
Once I take care of him, the whole town is ours for the taking.
The only help he had was the deputy sheriff and maybe the blacksmith. I shot the deputy. He's either dead or laid up. So that just leaves the blacksmith, and he ought to be no trouble at all without the other two.
Rosanna Swain dipped her scrub brush into the bucket of soapy water again, then applied it aggressively to the pattern of stains on the wooden floor. It appeared to be a hopeless endeavor, for the blood stains had leached into the grain of the pine planks. Lena Hatfield entered from the storeroom.
Oh, darling, you shouldn't be doing that.
It's all right, I don't mind. I should be doing it, since I'm the one who caused it.
She straightened up to give Lena a smile.
I'm afraid they're not coming up anyway.
Until that morning, Rosanna had been reluctant to even enter the room where she had been accosted by the two hoodlums. The violent deaths of the two outlaws shattered her world of monotonous routine, causing a fear unknown to her. The picture of the two leering outlaws returned again and again to cause her to tremble, even days afterward. Everything seemed to happen then like lightning striking. She could still picture the image of the brave avenger who stood tall and powerful as he dispatched her two assailants. Out of gratitude for saving her life in the store, she had called him her guardian angel. She fervently hoped for his return to paradise.
Are you sure you're all right?
Yes, I'm fine. But I'm giving up on these spots.
Don't fret over them. After we open the store again, they'll be hid under a layer of dirt within a day or so.
She reached down to take Rosanna by the arm.
Come on, we'll fix something to eat. Fred'll be wanting dinner pretty soon.
From behind the back counter, where he was busy repairing broken shelves, Fred watched him prepare to go.
That's a fact, and I'm wondering why you ain't fixing some food right now.
Oh, Fred!
Fred and Lena had mounted a concerted effort to maintain an optimistic attitude toward the cleanup. It was still undetermined if enough of the settlement's population would remain to rebuild Raymond Pryor's dream. A meeting was planned for that evening to discuss the town's chances for survival. The merchants in Paradise were at the mercy of the surrounding settlers. Supplies could be freighted in from Helena, but Hatfield would wait for a commitment from the farmers that they were not going to pull up roots and move to another valley. There had already been agreement on the idea of selling Raymond Pryor's cattle and using the proceeds to strengthen the town's business. Joe Galt, with the help from Dr. Taylor's son, Mike, had already been trying to round up some of the strays that ventured too far from the herd. But it was going to take more than two of them to move the entire herd to Deer Lodge, where a large outfit, the Double B, would probably buy them. Joe figured the Double B could lend a few hands to help move the cattle. Ben Thompson's widow had offered Gus Hopkins half interest in the saloon if he would take over the management of it, so Gus was a strong advocate for resurrecting the town. Dr. Taylor had committed to stay, as had Arnold Poss and Wilson James, the barber and undertaker. With the help of a crutch, Tom Austin was already up and about, offering any help he could manage. The commitment they all needed was that of the settlers on the farms outside the town, and that would most likely be determined at the meeting in the saloon that evening.
Don't you be too long, Fred. We're going to eat a little early because of the meeting tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think Jason will come back to Paradise?
Well, I don't have any idea. I don't know why he would. A man like Jason Storm isn't likely to settle down in one spot for very long. Why do you ask?
No reason. Just curious. Don't you wonder if he'll catch up with Mace Cantrell and if we'll ever see him again?
No, I don't. There's nothing I can do about it one way or another. They're two of a kind. If he catches up with Cantrell, one of them will probably shoot the other one, and that'll be the end of that. The one that walks away will find some other place to make trouble.
Jason hasn't made any trouble. If it wasn't for him, we might all be dead.
I guess you're right. I guess I am wrong to judge Jason, but I don't think you should count on him too much. I don't want to see you get hurt.
Rosanna could feel a sudden blush in her cheeks.
I'm not gonna get hurt. I'm just grateful to him for what he's done for all of us. My goodness, Lena, you worry too much.
It was a near 100% turnout for the meeting. At evening's end, as the wagons and teams rattled out of town to return to the homesteads, it was with general agreement that Paradise was critical to all involved and worth the effort to breathe life back into. A low rumbling of thunder suggested the possibility of a storm in the offing. Some might remember it in the days ahead and feel that it had been an omen for the deadly tempest about to descend upon the innocent town in the form of five desperate outlaws. The afternoon that followed the town meeting saw a line of thunderstorms drift across the valley, bringing a noisy display of lightning and thunder, but little rain until the clouds opened up a couple of hours before dark. Five riders, their rain slickers pulled tight around their collars, sat slumped in the saddle, cursing the downpour. The plan had been to avoid the town, since the town folk knew Mace Cantrell and might start shooting on sight. As the hours passed with no relief from the rain, however, their discomfort caused them to reconsider going straight to Pryor's ranch and the cattle. Booker peered through the rain.
I'll tell you what's the truth. There's nothing that wouldn't fix me up like a place to get a drink of liquor and a roof over my head.
Amen to that. I'm so damn wet, I think I'm starting to grow some gills.
Paradise ain't more than a mile or so if you follow the river. That's the only place you're gonna find a drink and a dry place to drink it. But like I said, they damn sure know me, and I ain't likely to get a welcome.
I say to hell with them. What are they gonna do about it if they do know you? According to what you told us, there ain't nobody but one man that's liable to cause any trouble anyway.
And you said you're wanting to find him. Maybe you'll get your chance tonight. and then we won't have to worry about him no more.
Hell, we need to pull any teeth that town's got left anyway. I'm gonna get me a drink.
I reckon we might as well.
Aware Booker had presumed to speak for the five of them, Mace determined it was a habit he did not intend to put up with on a permanent basis. Most nights, Gus didn't see many customers in the saloon, and on a stormy night like this, he didn't expect to see more than one or two. For that reason, he was surprised when a group of five men pushed through the bat wings, shaking the rain from their slickers and hats. One Eye slammed his fist on the bar.
Whiskey!
Catching the urgency, Gus reached for a bottle, only to freeze when he looked at the man at the end of the bar.
Cantrell.
While Gus was still frozen with his hand clutching the whiskey bottle, Mace whipped out his pistol and stuck the barrel up in Gus's face.
Yeah, I'm back. And you make one move for that shotgun under the counter, I'll split your skull for you.
Almost in a state of shock, Gus could do little more than nod his understanding of the threat. He felt a cold shock run the length of his spine when he took a harder look at the four men who came in with Cantrell. He had been lucky to escape with his life when Cantrell visited the town before. He wondered now if his luck was gonna hold.
Don't shoot him till he pours us a drink.
You gonna cause us a problem?
No, sir.
Good. Maybe you'll live a lot longer that way. Get the whiskey.
Where is he? That big son of a bitch.
Jason Storm? He ain't here. He left here looking for you.
Jason Storm? Is that the man you've been talking about?
Unaware of the significance of it, Cantrell shrugged indifferently.
Hell, I don't know his name. I just know I need to see his ass over the sights of my pistol.
Booker looked back at Gus for confirmation.
Jason Storm? Is that the man that shot Cantrell's partners?
Yes, sir. That's his name.
The other four all stared at a confused Mace Cantrell.
Jason Storm is a U.S. Deputy Marshal over in Cheyenne, and a hell-raising son of a bitch. He's the reason we ain't been doing business in that territory.
Yeah, I might have figured him for a lawman, but that don't make no difference. In fact, it's all the more reason to shoot this son of a bitch.
It ain't that easy. He's filled up graveyards by himself.
Well, I ain't afraid of him. And I aim to put the bastard in the ground if I run into him again.
Good! I'll be damn glad when you do.
He tossed his drink down and motioned for Gus to refill his glass.
I expect we'd best get along and do what we came here for.
And that? Hell, there ain't much we can do with them cows in this rain.
Shut your mouth! Ain't no use telling everybody where we're heading.
Booker cocked his head sharply to see if Gus had heard the remark. Gus gave no indication that he had.
Drink up, boys. We still got a piece to go tonight.
Booker's three men prepared to leave. Mace hesitated, still thinking over what had just been said and the revelation about Jason Storm. He recalled his last image of the big lawman. It caused him to fear for his life, even abandon his own brother. He found the thought hard to endure, and he knew the only way he could rid his mind of the nagging guilt was to see Jason Storm dead. With four other guns around him, he was more determined than ever to settle with the lawman.
Somebody gonna pay for the drinks?
Put it on my bill.
Gus stood there, staring at the empty doorway as if he'd just been visited by a ghost. It was only for a moment, however, for as soon as he heard their horses pulling away from the hitching rail, he rushed to the store next door to give Fred Hatfield the bad news.
He's back!
Who's back? What are you so all fired excited about, Gus?
That killer! That Cantrell bastard! He was just in the saloon a few minutes ago, and he's got four more with him. Now, they're a meaner-looking bunch than the first ones.
Are they still in the saloon?
No. They just stayed long enough for Cantrell to put a pistol in my face. They're going out to Pryor's place to steal our cattle.
They told you that?
No, I overheard them talking about cattle. I played it like I didn't hear them, but somebody needs to warn Joe Galt and Dr. Taylor's boy.
Lena came in from the back room in time to hear the news. She paused in the doorway, clutching the door jamb for support.
Fred, go down to the stables and tell Tom Austin to go out to the ranch as quick as he can. I'll close the store and see you back at the house.
What can Tom do? He's still limping around on one foot.
Tom's all we've got. He can ride. He's got to try to warn Joe and Mike that those murderers are coming to rustle the cattle.
Maybe we ought to just let them have the damn cows. Then maybe they'll be on their way and leave us be.
Or they'll be back here to destroy the town. But this time we're going to stand and protect what's ours. Go on, get Tom started. I'll be at the house. Rosanna and I can rustle up some food to hold us for a while if they come back and try to rob us again. This time, there'll be three of us with shotguns.
Lena's right, Gus. We're not going to let those hoodlums just walk right in here and take whatever the hell they want.
Well, that may be the thing for you to do. You're talking about three guns to protect your store, but there ain't nobody but me in the saloon. There ain't no way I can hold out against five of them if they're of a mind to come into my place. Hell, they'll just burn down the town. Like they did at Mr. Pryor's ranch. And there ain't no sense in sending Tom to warn Joe Galt. Them fellers has already got a big start on them. They'll be there before Tom can warn anybody.
He's right, Lena. There ain't no sense in Tom riding out there. The best thing for him to do is get the word out to everybody in town to be ready for those outlaws if they come back to raid the place.
I wish Jason Storm was here. He'd know what to do.
Well, he ain't. And I'll tell you something else that might surprise you. Jason Storm was a U.S. Deputy Marshal down in Wyoming Territory.
Well, that, by God, explains a lot of things, don't it? How do you know he was a marshal?
Them fellas with Cantrell, they knew the name. They said he was a hell-raising lawman that ran them out of Wyoming. I'll go tell Tom what's going on. You know, maybe they ain't even planning on coming back here. Maybe they'll just take the cattle and go.
They'll be back here. They'll figure there ain't nothing to stop them. I'll go get Rosanna. We'd best stay in the store tonight in case they do come back.
They parted then. Gus to look for Tom Austin. Fred with Lena to get Rosanna. One common thought in all three minds, aside from cold fear, was what an asinine dream they had shared to build a successful town. There was no chance without effective law enforcement capability. They also shared serious concern for Joe Galt and Mike Taylor, knowing the trouble heading their way, but they felt helpless to do anything about it. It was too big a job for one man and a boy of 14, but Joe Galt and Mike had labored diligently to try to gather most of Raymond Pryor's herd in one spot. The rain, while making their chore uncomfortable, was actually a help, because the cattle were more inclined to stay together in the narrow valley just north of the burnt-out ruins of Pryor's Ranch. They had no notion of moving the herd themselves. Their work over the last few days had been to try to round up as many strays as possible so they could get an accurate estimate of the total number. Joe planned to ride north to the Double B in a day or so. If things went as planned, maybe they could sell the herd and turn the job over to the Double B hands. Joe cast a baleful look at the herd.
I ain't been in the cattle business but 4 days, and that's 4 days more than I wanted.
Mike ignored the rain when he reached out from under the slicker that he had fashioned into a tent.
I reckon it's gonna take me 4 more days to ever dry out again.
Bam! It's black as the inside of a boot.
Joe looked toward the ridge that formed the east side of the valley.
But I reckon that's better than all the lightning that passed over a few hours ago. At least the cattle don't seem to be as nervous as they were. I expect they're quiet enough so we can take turns riding night herd. Maybe we can get a little sleep.
I ain't really sleepy yet. I'll take first watch if that's okay with you.
Hell, I don't care one way or the other. If you want to go first, I'll take a little nap and you can wake me up in a couple hours.
That settled, Mike pulled his slicker off the laurel branches that had served as support for his temporary tent and started for his horse, leaving Joe Galt to catch a few hours' sleep.
Mr. Galt! Mr. Galt!
Mike nudged the sleeping man on the shoulder. It had only been an hour, but Joe was deep in slumber and reluctant to leave it. The downpour finally stopped.
Mr. Galt, wake up!
What? What is it?
He sat up to find Mike kneeling before him.
There's a bunch of riders down by the old bunkhouse, and it looks like they're setting up a camp under the trees.
Riders? How many riders?
I counted five.
Now, who in the hell?
Joe scrambled out of his blanket and followed Mike to a knob in the ridge overlooking the valley below. Already, the flames from a campfire could be seen flickering through the pine trees that stood near the burnt timbers of the bunkhouse. There were figures moving about the campfire, but it was too dark to identify anyone. It would have been difficult at that distance even in daylight, but it was safe to assume the riders arrived with no other purpose than to steal the cattle.
Now, what are we gonna do?
I don't know. You see, you counted five of them?
It was impossible to tell the number in the dark stand of trees.
Yes, sir. I saw them when they first rode across the clearing in front of the old barn. There was five of them and three pack horses. You reckon they're after the cattle?
I can't think of any other reason for them to show up here.
Joe looked back up the valley, where the herd huddled in quiet. It was unlikely the five riders could hear the cows from where they made their camp.
I guess we'll find out what they're up to when the sun comes up.
Maybe they're just on their way up to that big ranch in Deer Park.
I reckon we'll keep an eye on them tonight from here. We'll see in the morning what kind of hand we have to play.
The camp seemed to be in no hurry to get started. The five men took their time around the breakfast fire until well after sunup. From the knob on the ridge, Joe and Mike watched and waited. Behind them, farther up the canyon, the cattle were slowly starting to drift toward the pass at the east end.
At least the damn cows are heading away from them.
Uh-oh.
Mike saw the strangers breaking camp and mounting up.
They're heading straight up the canyon after the cattle.
It was decision time for Joe Galt. He couldn't just turn tail and run and let the rustlers have the town's cattle herd.
I'm going to ride down and head them off. It could be they ain't thought about taking our cattle. Maybe just herd the cattle and are riding up the canyon because they're curious. You stay about halfway down the ridge where they can see you. But if anything goes wrong, you hightail it for paradise. These cows ain't worth getting killed for.
They split up then, and Joe rode down to the canyon floor to get in a position to intercept the riders already leaving the valley. Pulling up on a slight rise at the turn in the canyon, he waited. In a few minutes' time, the five riders appeared. Booker, in front of the others, was surprised by the sudden discovery of the lone rider.
Whoa!
Joe Galt was calmly sitting his horse. Booker took a moment to glance all around him, looking for others. When he saw no one else, he nudged his horse forward, stopping again about a dozen yards from Galt. He fashioned a wide smile.
Good morning.
Morning. Where are you fellas headed?
Where are we headed? We're just coming to get our cattle. Me and the boys appreciate you keeping an eye on them for us, but we can take care of them now.
Joe backed his horse a few paces when the four men with Booker fanned out to confront him in a semicircle.
You fellas made a mistake. These cows belong to the town of Paradise.
He nodded toward Mike, who was watching them from halfway up the ridge.
The rest of the drovers are on the other side of the ridge.
Booker glanced up at Mike, then returned his gaze to the man confronting him.
Is that a fact?
Booker pointed beyond Joe.
I'd say ain't nobody herding them cows, the way they're milling about. Like I said, them cows belong to us.
Cantrell was staring hard at Galt.
Ain't you the blacksmith?
Cantrell's hand moved down to rest on the handle of his pistol. Until that moment, Joe had been focusing his attention on Booker. When Cantrell spoke, Joe recognized him as the murderer who assaulted the town before. His thoughts immediately turned then to saving his neck.
Maybe. Why, you're the son of a bitch that shot my brother.
Mace pulled his pistol. With no time to turn and run, Joe kicked his horse hard and in a desperate move, charged straight toward One Eye and Stump, busting between them and causing their horses to start and spring sideways. Racing down the canyon at a full gallop, he left the outlaws trying to control their mounts and their pack horses. By the time they were able to start shooting, he was too far for accuracy. He hoped Mike had sense enough to run as well. Pushing for all the speed he could coax from his rapidly tiring horse, Joe Galt glanced back to see if he was being pursued. Two riders were coming on hard. he had to consider a place to find cover and defend himself. Looking ahead of him now, he could see the scorched timbers of Raymond Pryor's ranch. It was as good as it was gonna get. He steered his horse toward the ruins of the barn. When little more than 100 yards from the barn, he suddenly pulled his horse up short when another man appeared, seemingly out of nowhere, standing next to a scorched corner post, his rifle raised and aimed in his direction.
Son of a...
Then he recognized the solid form of Jason Storm.
Jason, don't shoot! It's me, Joe Gull!
By stopping, he had allowed the two men chasing him to gain on him. He kicked his horse again and started toward the barn, but Jason appeared not to have heard him and continued to aim his rifle.
Jason, don't shoot!
The stalwart figure with the rifle raised to his shoulder gave no indication he heard Joe's plea.
Jesus!
Joe wheeled his horse violently to the side. In his attempt to escape, he looked back to see one of the men chasing him slump in the saddle before falling to the ground. The other one abruptly turned and whipped his horse mercilessly as he retreated back up the canyon. With frayed nerves, but realizing he had not been Jason's target, Joe Galt pulled his horse to a stop and sat while he tried to gain control of his emotions, knowing it would be a waste of ammunition to fire at the fleeing figure on horseback. Jason lowered his rifle and rode his horse out to meet Joe.
Whew, I swear I thought you was gonna shoot me.
Sorry, but that fella was getting ready to shoot at you. I would have liked to wait till they got a little closer. Might have had a shot at both of them.
I'm mighty glad to see you, even though you like to scare me to death. They've got the cattle. That Cantrell bastard is back with 4 other men. Well, 3 other men now.
I know.
Jason had rode all the previous day and straight through the night in an effort to reach Paradise Valley in time. Both he and his horse stood near exhaustion, but at least he'd managed to get there before Cantrell was gone.
What do you reckon we ought to do?
Nothing we can do but try to trail him. It ain't gonna be too fast because my horse is worn out. I'm gonna have to rest him.
He looked a couple 100 yards up the valley, where Jimmy Peterson's horse stood grazing now.
I might swap horses for a bit till Biscuit gets rested up.
He guided Biscuit toward the outlaw's horse.
Mike! Damn! Doc Taylor's boy, Mike. He's been helping me with the cattle. I told him to hightail if he had trouble with them outlaws. They must have caught him, or the damn fool kid might have took a notion to shoot it out with him.
They reached the stray horse. Jason reached down to pick up the reins. A solid blow slammed into Jason's chest. He slid from the saddle to land on the ground. At first, he couldn't believe he'd been shot. He felt pain from the impact caused by his body landing hard on the ground, but only an instant numbness in his chest. The condition lasted for only a matter of seconds, however, before a fiery pain ripped through his ribs and he looked down to see his shirt staining red with blood. His initial reaction was anger that he had ridden blindly into an ambush. The fleeing outlaw had doubled back and waited to bushwhack him. Jason saw the blacksmith was on the ground now, using his horse for cover.
Jason, you all right?
Afraid not. I think I'm hurt pretty bad.
Another bullet hit Peterson's horse, providing more protection for the two men. The shooter pumped 2 more shots into the dying horse. As the pain increased, Jason became more and more disgusted with himself for getting shot. He'd been careless, something he was not usually guilty of, and he refused to blame it on exhaustion and lack of sleep. 200 yards distant behind a knee-high rock formation, Mace Cantrell knelt.
Special gift for you, you son of a bitch.
He had recognized the man who killed Jimmy Peterson at once. It would have been hard to mistake the formidable figure of Jason Storm. His first impulse had been to turn and run, as he had the last time he confronted him. Galloping away, knowing they would come after him, he became more and more angry at his flight from this personal devil again. Spotting the rocks, he told himself it was a perfect spot to ambush his pursuers. Now, after watching the fearsome Avenger fall to the ground, his mind leaped to a near euphoria. He watched anxiously, smiling to himself when Jason failed to get up. He had finally freed his mind of the shadow of the one man who caused him fear. He climbed in the saddle again and galloped away to rejoin Booker and the others. Feeling invincible once more, he was confident the blacksmith wouldn't follow. In fact, he realized that without Jason Storm, the pathetic community of Paradise couldn't protect itself.
There just may be a change of plans before we drive that herd away from here. I might just own myself a whole town.
Cantrell caught up to Booker near the pass at the far end of the canyon.
What was that shooting I heard?
That Jasper on the hill took a couple shots at us. Stumping One Eye went after him, and he ran like a scared rabbit.
Booker looked over Cantrell's shoulder.
I heard the shooting back your way. Where's Jimmy?
Well, Jimmy's luck ran out. That son of a bitch, Storm, shot him. But you don't have to worry about Jason Storm no more. I killed him.
Booker was plainly irritated by the loss of one of his men.
You kill him? You sure he's dead?
Well, I hit him square in the chest and he went down and he didn't get up again. I reckon that's dead all right.
What about Jimmy? You sure he was dead? Well, why didn't you bring him back with you?
Well, hell, I couldn't. There was that other fella, the blacksmith. He was in a spot behind the horses where he could shoot at me all he wanted. I did the only thing I could do, and that was to get my ass out of there before I joined Jimmy in hell.
Booker continued to frown.
The devil take Jimmy. He didn't look like he was worth a handful of horse turds anyway. We got a damn good trade. Jimmy for Jason Storm. These cows and the whole damn town are ours for the taking now, with him out of the way.
Maybe so.
Like Cantrell, Booker had never put a great deal of confidence in Jimmy Peterson, but it still irritated him that Mace held no regard for the loss of one of his men. The sudden appearance of Stump and One Eye at the crest of the ridge caused him to turn his attention to them. He waited until they descended the ridge and pulled up beside him.
So, we lost him.
We chased him down the side of the ridge and he cut through a notch between those two mountains over yonder to the north.
We followed him through the notch, but he wasn't there no more. I guess he sprouted wings and flew.
Booker gave it a long moment's thought. He would have preferred to leave no witnesses.
Well, I reckon we'd better see if we can move these damn cows somewhere where we can keep an eye on them.
Behind them, near the ruins of the Pryor Ranch, Joe Galt looked at Jason.
I gotta get you on your horse. If I help you, can you get up?
I reckon I have to. I got no intention of dying here on my back. I better get on the horse while I still can.
With Joe's strong support, he was just able to get in the saddle, but not without excruciating pain. Feeling dizzy now, he fell forward on Biscuit's neck.
We should get you to Dr. Taylor's house.
Joe, I don't think I can make it. My cabin ain't too far from here. I can make it there. Maybe after I'll rest up a little, I'll be stronger.
Joe was relieved to find that Mike Taylor had reached Paradise ahead of him. By the time the blacksmith pulled his horse up to the stable, Mike and Austin were already warning the people about the possibility of another raid by the outlaws. A group had gathered in Fred Hatfield's store to discuss the threat. That was where Joe found them.
There's Joe Galt. Oh, I didn't know what happened to you. I was afraid they killed you for sure.
A relieved Mike Taylor offered Joe his hand.
If it hadn't been for Jason Storm, they might have.
Everyone looked toward the door in hopes the rugged man would appear.
Folks, listen. He got shot.
Is he dead?
Wilson James, the barber, turned pale.
No, but he's hurt pretty bad. Too bad to ride back here to Paradise. Lost a lot of blood.
Rosanna stepped forward.
Where is he?
I left him at that place he built up on Blind Woman Creek.
You left him there by himself?
Well, there wasn't nothing else I could do for him. I left him food and water.
He was the one that insisted I leave him and come make sure you folks are ready, in case Cantrell and the others hit paradise again.
Joe glanced over at Mike.
We heard shots back where I left you. We didn't know if you got shot or not.
I took a couple shots at him, but I didn't hit nothing. They started after me, so I hightailed it out of there. I took off up the back side of the canyon so I wouldn't lead them back here.
Arnold Pye shrugged his shoulders in wonder.
Well, they got the cattle. Why would they come back here?
I could think of a few good reasons. Because they didn't have a chance to clean us out the first time, and revenge for us killing their friends, and the fact that Jason Storm ain't here to stop them. Well, this time, we'd better be ready. Because if we ain't, they're gonna wipe us out.
What about Jason? We have to help him.
She turned to beseech Dr. Taylor.
He needs a doctor. He needs our help. We owe him that, and a lot more.
I reckon I could ride out there to tend to him, but I haven't any idea where to find his cabin.
I know where it is, Pa. I could take you there.
All right.
I'm going with you.
Honey, are you sure you want to? It might be better to just let Dr. Taylor go. He'll take care of him.
Although Gus Hopkins had told him Jason was a retired lawman, Lena could not release her concern about Rosanna's apparent infatuation with Jason.
Every time I've needed Jason Storm, he's been there. The least I can do is try to be there for him.
Ain't this a pretty mess?
Jason Storm could not remember feeling more helpless in his life. Propped up on the bunk he had made that summer, with his back against the wall, he berated himself over and over for getting shot. He couldn't say how serious his wound might be. His thoughts were interrupted by an inquisitive whinny from Biscuit outside. He tried to force his senses to become alert.
They found me already?
He pushed himself as upright against the wall as he could manage and picked up the pistol beside him, ready to give any uninvited visitors a warm welcome when they came in the door. He waited.
Jason?
Jason, it's Dr. Taylor. We've come to help you.
Well, come on in, then.
Moments later, Rosanna hurried through the doorway, followed by the doctor and his son.
Oh, Jason.
Rosanna felt true distress when she saw him. He was always a tower of strength and power, and she was alarmed to see him in such an apparent state of helplessness. She rushed to his bedside.
We're going to take care of you.
After giving her a moment, Dr. Taylor gently pulled Rosanna aside to give himself room to examine Jason's wound.
Maybe you can build a fire in the fireplace so we can heat up some water.
I'll get the wood for her.
Good. Now, give me some room so I can see what we've got here.
While she waited for Mike to bring in the wood, Rosanna looked around the cabin Jason called home. Except for the clutter around his bunk, the house stood neat and clean. Nodding her approval to herself, she focused then on the saddlebag filled with dried jerky and the bucket of water next to it. Flabbergasted, she picked the bag up and looked inside.
You intended to nourish yourself with this?
Well, that's all I had.
Well, it's a good thing I came. I brought some beans and side meat and some coffee in case you didn't have any.
We could all use some coffee.
Dr. Taylor was glad to see that Rosanna saw fit to bring food. He also noticed she brought a satchel with a change of clothes, but he thought it best at the time not to comment on it. It appeared she intended to stay with Jason, and it was a good thing, because it would be difficult for Jason to take care of himself.
Well, if that bullet was a little further toward your shoulder, I'd say just leave it in there. But the way it's lodged up close to your ribs, I think I'd best try to get it out, in case it might move around and cause some trouble later on.
No, whatever you say, Doc.
Now, that's gonna hurt like hell. Have you got any liquor? Might be easier if you were drunk. I brought a couple of bottles of laudanum, but that'll just ease the pain a little afterward. Works a little better if you mix it with some whiskey.
Mm-hmm. On the shelf, by the kitchen window.
Later, Dr. Taylor fixed a bandage on the sleeping man's chest.
There. Damned if he ain't a grizzly bear. That had to hurt. and he stayed awake the whole time I was cutting into him.
Doc Taylor turned to talk to Rosanna.
I could use some of that coffee. He's gonna feel like hell when he wakes up, but I guess he'll be able to take care of himself.
I'll take care of him.
Are you sure you want to stay? What will I tell Fred and Lena about how long you'll be here? It's gonna be a while before he's on his feet again.
I'll stay as long as it takes. I owe him that. I can't leave him here with nobody to take care of him.
All right, then. You seem to know what you're doing.
Taylor gave her some instructions on how to care for the wound and what to do if it appeared to become infected. When he was satisfied, he closed his bag.
Come on, Mike. It's going to be close to dark by the time we get home.
Rosanna stood, thinking about the decision she had made. What if Jason didn't pull through?
No. He will pull through. I won't let him die.
She imagined Lena's distress when she did not return with Dr. Taylor. There was no way she could explain to Lena why she wanted to take care of Jason. She wished that she could make her friend see the decent soul of Jason Storm. Lena could only see the violent side of the man who appeared to live by the gun. And Rosanna knew that Lena was only concerned for her, afraid she was throwing herself at a man incapable of tender feelings or human compassion. To Lena, he was a killing machine, not so different from Mace Cantrell and his ilk, even though he'd been on the side of the law. But Rosanna had looked into his eyes and seen the calm decency that dwelt deep within the man. Being completely honest with herself, she admitted that she had been drawn to him almost from the first. So much so that she prayed for forgiveness for her feelings so soon after John's death.
What's to become of you, Rosanna?
After placing another piece of wood on the fire, she moved to the side of the bunk and stood gazing at the sleeping man.
Like a baby. Lena should see her fearsome gunfighter now.
There were no chairs in the rough abode, only a stool next to the table. So she wrapped the one blanket she found around her shoulders and sat down against the wall by his bed. Her intention was to remain awake in case he awoke and needed something. But he seemed deeply drawn into his alcohol-induced sleep. And after a while, she dozed off herself.
Draw down your gun!
She was awakened a short time later by his voice. Realizing that he was dreaming, she placed a hand on his forehead. He felt feverish, so she went to the water bucket, wet a cloth she had brought with her, and placed it on his forehead. His eyes flicked open for a few moments.
Is that you, Mary Ellen? What is it?
Nothing, Jason. Go back to sleep now.
Mary Ellen, a wife, a lover? His outcry troubled her, but she quickly reprimanded herself. A man his age? Of course he'd known a woman in his life, maybe more than one. It'd be unusual if he hadn't. After all, she had been married. She admonished herself not to make a judgment until she knew all the facts. It took a little while. But she finally managed to fall asleep again. When she emerged from a fitful night, sunlight was already shining through the front window of the cabin. She took a moment to blink away the sleep from her eyes. When she got up to check on her patient, she found him staring wide-eyed at her. Surprised to find him so alert, she was too startled to speak.
Dr. Taylor still here?
No, Dr. Taylor and his son left last night.
But you stayed.
Somebody had to stay and take care of you. Go out and get yourself shot. You need somebody to look after you.
She felt his forehead.
Fever's gone. How do you feel?
I don't know which hurts most. My chest or my head. I don't believe I've ever drunk that much whiskey at one time in my whole life.
He closed his eyes for a second as if reminded of the huge hangover. When he opened them again, he He gazed into her eyes.
You should have gone back with Dr. Taylor. I ain't in no shape to take care of you here.
She placed her hands on her hips and gazed back at him in mock disgust.
You're not in shape to take care of anybody. Certainly not yourself. I'll be taking care of you, and you better not give me any trouble.
He wanted to tell her how happy he was to see her, but he felt sure she was there because she thought she was obliged to repay him, and he didn't want to cause her any embarrassment.
You don't owe me anything, Rosanna. And you might wish you hadn't stayed before it's over. As soon as I can, I'll try to see you safely home, but right now there are some things I gotta do by myself. And it ain't gonna be easy.
You're talking nonsense. What kind of things have you got to do that I can't help you with?
Well, for right now, I'm about to bust my bladder with all that damn whiskey I downed last night. You sure as hell ain't gonna help me with that.
On the second day of his recovery, Jason decided he could get off the bunk. He managed to stand for a few minutes before he started to sway, and he would have fallen had not Rosanna been there to support him. He was angry at himself for his weakness.
Tomorrow, then.
Jason made steady progress. On the fourth day, they had a visitor when young Mike Taylor showed up about midday.
Mike, what's the news in Paradise?
We got ready to defend the town, but so far we've seen no sign of Cantrell or the others. I brought you some things from Mrs. Hatfield. She sent some flour and lard, some cornmeal, and some more coffee beans.
Mike looked at Jason with a wide grin.
I swear, I'm glad to see you alive. I wasn't sure you were going to make it the last time I saw you.
Well, I reckon you can credit Rosanna here for that. Wasn't too sure of it myself when you folks showed up that night. I guess Doc did a good job, because I'm getting stronger every day.
Rosanna looked at Mike and shook her head.
He's got a lot more healing to do yet. The wound looked better this morning when I changed his bandage, but he needs something better than bacon and beans to make his blood strong. He needs some red meat.
Well, I can kill one of those cows grazing out there. I can butcher one, too. I helped Garland Wheeler when he butchered one.
Mike glanced over at the wounded man.
I reckon that's up to Jason, though.
No, it's not. It's up to me, and I say he needs red meat to help him heal.
Mike looked at Jason again to see his reaction to her statement.
Well, I reckon she's the boss. You can kill one of the calves. It'd be less waste. We ain't got time to dry it now before it spoils.
Mike's butchering skills needed a lot of work, but he managed to render enough meat to satisfy their needs for several days, as well as a fair portion to take back to town with him. After a supper that satisfied everyone's appetite, Jason and Rosanna said goodbye to Mike and thanked him for his help. Then, in spite of Rosanna's protests, Jason fashioned a bed for himself using saddle blankets and the one extra blanket he carried behind his saddle. He insisted she needed a better night's sleep, and he was right concerning Rosanna's state of fatigue, for she was still sleeping when he got up the next morning. While she slept, he revived the fire and put on some coffee to boil. Then he walked outside to evaluate his condition of recovery. Walking to the woods behind the cabin to tend to his morning urgencies, he was aware that he was still a little shaky. But he figured he'd be a bit steadier after he had coffee and some food. His wound, though tender as hell, had not bled overnight. And while it was painful to turn his shoulders very far in either direction, he pronounced himself ready to ride.
What are you doing up?
Rosanna woke to find Jason filling the two cups with fresh coffee. She looked around in distress.
How long have I been lolling here in bed while you were doing my job?
Not long. Did you get a good night's sleep?
I did.
She hurried out of bed. She noticed then that he was wearing his boots and obviously dressed to do more than sit around the cabin.
What are you fixing to do?
Well, I figure it's time to get you back to town before folks start to talk about you.
Jason, you're not ready to go looking for trouble. Your wound needs time to heal.
I'll be all right. I heal pretty fast.
He paused to take a sip of the hot coffee while he formed his words in his mind.
Now, I reckon you know I can't thank you enough for coming out here to take care of me. I know it was a heap of trouble on your part, and I just want you to know I appreciate it.
Jason, I wanted to do
it. She studied his eyes as he gazed at her.
Why didn't you tell anyone that you were a law officer?
I don't know. I just wanted to put all that behind me, I guess. Wanted to start out new before I got too old to do it.
And you came here and got tossed right back into chasing outlaws.
Yep, I guess I did, didn't I?
Who is Mary Ellen? Was she your wife?
Mary Ellen?
Yes, you called out to her during your sleep one night.
Mary Ellen was my wife. Pneumonia took her from me a long time ago. We hadn't been married but a couple of years.
They sat in silence for a few minutes, drinking their coffee.
Well, if you're intent upon getting rid of me, I guess I'd better fix some breakfast. It's a pretty good ride back to paradise.
Jason turned to the door to saddle Biscuit, then stopped.
I don't have but one saddle. You want me to bridle my pack horse so you can ride bareback, or you want to ride up behind me on Biscuit?
I'll ride Biscuit.
Hard-headed sons of bitches!
Booker dropped down to sit in frustration. The four outlaws were finding out in short order that they knew little about moving a herd the size of this one. They had rustled cattle before, but not in numbers this great. Their experience had been limited to cutting out a dozen or so from ranchers' herds and stampeding them ahead of them in their getaway. Booker looked around him to find his partners exhibiting a similar lack of drover expertise.
Maybe this ain't such a good idea.
He looked across the patch of ground at Stump.
Let's let him graze here for a while. I'm hungry.
He got no objection from Stump, who was as frustrated as he was.
I'll get a fire started. Go out to signal One-Eye Cantrell.
When they arrived to join Booker, he was still struggling with flint and steel trying to light his fire.
Ow, who's got some damn lucifers? I swear I don't know what happened to all mine, and it's gonna take all day to start this fire this way.
I still got plenty. You ain't doing it right anyway. You got to get you something better than them sticks for tinder, else you ain't never gonna get a spark to light it.
You'd be in a hell of a fix by yourself without no matches. I reckon you'd have to eat your meat raw.
Not as long as I could bust open a cartridge and dump the gunpowder out of it.
Most likely blow your arm off.
One Eye did not need to hear any more.
You two move aside and argue somewhere else. Me and Stump want to get some coffee made before dark.
Booker gladly let him take over the chore. He stepped out of the way to watch One Eye work. While he watched, his discontent with driving cattle returned.
I swear I hate driving cattle.
I ain't partial to it myself, especially when there ain't no chuck wagon along.
We're already short of supplies, and there ain't no place to get any between here and the mussel shell.
His comments started the other three thinking. The plan they had talked over and decided upon was to drive the stolen cattle to a grassy roundup spot next to the Mussel Shell River, a spot often used by a large cattle outfit. They had sold small lots of cattle to the owner of the large outfit before. He had no qualms about where the cows had come from, and he paid cash on the barrelhead. But there had been some speculation that the rancher might not want to buy a herd of this size.
What the hell will we do with them? If he don't buy them, we sure as hell can't keep driving that many cows all over the territory.
He's always paid cash on the spot before.
For the few we had to sell, he ain't likely to be carrying enough cash with him to buy all these cows. We'd have to wait for our money and trust him on the sale.
The discussion went on for a while until Cantrell finally summed things up.
There ain't no towns where we're heading, and we need supplies. There's a town for the taking a day and a half back that way.
I say we leave the damn cows right where they are for a few days. They've got grass and water. They ain't going nowhere. They'll be right here when we get back, and we'll get the stuff we need.
His companions looked at each other, thinking it over.
Hell, sounds like the thing to do. They're as good as in a holding pen right where they are.
Suits me. I need a drink of whiskey.
Booker looked at Cantrell and shrugged.
I reckon we're riding back to paradise.
The comment brought a smile to Cantrell's face. He, like the others, could use some supplies. But the thought of being driven out of town before never left his mind for most of his waking hours. Now, he would have his revenge upon that miserable little town for the pain and humiliation its inhabitants caused him. Of that he was certain, and it seemed that the slow, frustrating task of driving the herd of cattle was only serving to take him farther and farther away from realizing his vengeance. The killing of Jason Storm was not enough to satisfy his lust. He would not be content until he had killed everyone who dared to resist him, especially those who took hand in the death of his brother.